Welcome back, everyone, to 1001 Heroes, Legends, Histories, and Mysteries. This is your host, John Hagedorn, and we're very happy to have with us today author Ferris Cassell, who has just released a book called The Unanswered Letter. And I think you're going to find this story absolutely fascinating. I know I did. I'm going to read a little intro to the book for you listeners just to get this started. The title of the book, The Unanswered Letter, One Holocaust Family's Desperate Plea for Help. You are surely informed about the situation of all Jews in Central Europe, this 50-plus-year-old letter read. Help us to follow our children. It is our last and only hope. This was the desperate plea of Alfred Berger, mailed in a letter to an American stranger who happened to share his last name. 50 years later, after languishing in a trunk in a California attic, the letter improbably found itself in the hands of journalist Ferris Cassell, who wouldn't rest until she had discovered the ending to this incredible story. Ferris, it's great to have you with us today.
Thanks, John. I appreciate your having me here.
Ferris, please do just jump right into this story. I found it to be absolutely incredible. I couldn't put it down. It's such a fantastic piece of history, and it's a tremendous story. Tell us how it all got started.
Well, yes, the story actually kind of walked into my kitchen door one evening when I was cooking dinner. My husband brought the letter you read to people from. He brought it home one evening and said that a patient of his had given it to him that day. It had been sent to her uncle several generations earlier. And then it had come to her, and she gave it to my husband, probably, he thought, because he was the only Jew that she knew. When he showed me the letter and I read it, it was just really deeply, deeply moving. This Jewish man referring to, quote, the situation of all Jews in Central Europe and pleading for help for him. His name is Alfred Berger. Pleading for help for himself and his wife, Hedwig, to immigrate. He said his daughter and his wife already had a way to come to America, but they, Alfred and Hedwig, had no way, and he was begging for help, holding, and I just felt like I was holding a life in my hands, too.
Exactly. What was the date that he wrote this letter, and exactly what situation was surrounding Alfred Berger? Where was he? And what was the situation at that time?
The letter is written. The return address is Vienna, Germany. That would be Vienna under the Austrian, the German occupation. It was dated August 5th, 1939, which was really just days from World War II igniting across Europe.
And Germany had annexed Austria at that time.
Yes.
So they had already filed all the names of the Jews residing in Austria, and they already had plans as to what they were going to do with them. The only way you could get out was how?
So the Jews were desperate to flee the German Reich. They were already being sent to the early form of concentration camps, and they were suffering severe, severe persecution. But the Nazis also were charging exorbitant exit taxes. They were stripping the Jews of all their assets. So these hordes, these floods of penniless refugees were not welcomed around the world. Doors were slammed shut. And America had very strict quotas for immigration, and those quotas were held firm. So Alfred and Hedwig got in line, along with thousands of other Jews, to get a quota number for immigration to America. But their number numbers were about 45,000. And those numbers, in fact, would never, never rise to the top.
So they needed a letter that passed to America.
You need an affidavit of support to, and still do today, in many cases, to immigrate into America. This states that an American citizen will be willing to sponsor your immigration and be responsible for you so that no immigrants would become a public charge. And so Alfred and Hedwig were begging for an affidavit of sponsorship from an American citizen, strangers.
They knew nobody in America. He somehow found the name Berger and an address in L.A., was it? And wrote to that address.
This Berger family was in Los Angeles who kept this letter. The main post office in Vienna kept phone books, when there used to be phone books for people, from major cities all over the world. And this is probably how Alfred and Hedwig found this address. And they probably wrote a number of letters begging for help.
So here's a desperate plea. The letter makes it to this family Berger in Los Angeles. And what happened from that point on?
I interviewed my husband's patient to find the answer to that question myself. I had thought perhaps this would be an interesting story. I was a journalist for the local daily newspaper, and I thought this would make a very interesting human interest story. And I hoped it would be a story, sort of a greatest generation type story of an American family that reached out to help. My husband is a physician, and his patient, a longtime patient, brought the letter to him, telling him she thought it was a piece of history that, and perhaps he would know what to do with it. I asked my husband when he brought it home, why would she say that to him? And he said, well, I'm probably the only Jew that she knows. So that didn't make any sense to me without reading the letter. But once I read the letter of this desperate Jew, then I understood. It was all clear.
You said you had a feeling from the moment you first saw that letter that you wanted to at least find answers to what had happened, why the letter wasn't answered, what happened to this family, what happened to this man. Then the contents of this book take us through an incredible journey that you made spiritually and physically for what looks like years, trying to unravel this story. How did you go about unraveling it?
Well, my first job was to go to the Vienna archives and try to find out anything about Alfred and Hedwig. The Vienna archives used to boast that they had records from, quote, time out of mind. They keep amazing records of all their citizens, and they did and they still do. We're not quite familiar. We haven't been familiar with that in America, but in Austria, that was just what always had happened. So I did find out Alfred and Hedwig's existence. I found out where they had lived, and I found, most importantly, the last name of their married daughter who had immigrated to America. The last name is Cizes, C-I-Z-E-S. It's a very rare name in America, which was lucky for me because it helped me to locate the Berger's granddaughter in New York City. So I did find the contact information for her. I wrote her about this letter, which I believed Alfred was her grandfather, and that she would be very interested in receiving the letter herself. So I wrote her and phoned her for every day for a month before she finally got the courage to answer. She had been, and in the beginning, she was quite suspicious. She thought this was a big invasion of her privacy at best, and at worst, some sort of a scam. But when I read her the letter and she realized it truly was her grandfather, she wept. She wept. And we later became friends and a team working to research her family history, which she really never knew, had never known.
We'll return to our interview with Ferris Cassell and the unanswered letter right after this message from our sponsor. And now, back to our show. What were the biggest surprises for you in this search, and how long did it take?
The search, I had intended, as I said, for this to be a human interest story in my local newspaper. But the more I found out, the more this story opened up. And the more I learned, the more I wanted to know, and the more important this story seemed to become. So the most surprising things to me were probably what I feel was the nobility of this trapped family. They were courageous, they were kind, they were loving, and their dignity through the worst of times were an inspiration for me. And I felt that even though they were ordinary, really lower middle class people, they were important because they were human, because they're ordinary people like I am, like I believe everybody is, really.
There had to have been a lot of tears and pain on all sides as you experienced this search. What are some of the moments you remember best about people opening up, about people revealing their guilt or not? And what did you experience there?
There were so many moments like that. So many. One of the most disturbing moments was when I was in Vienna. My husband and I were there working with the Berger descendants to keep uncovering the story and experiencing the Vienna where their family had lived. So on one occasion, I had found a former Hitler Youth member, and she agreed to talk with me. So we went to her apartment. She was kind and gracious. And she told us how she had grown up as a member of Hitler Youth. She said all the girls joined, everybody did. And then she said, it was like your scouts. Well, that was really a heads up right there, that she was coming from a different place than we were. So she said that she liked the Hitler Youth because they did these fun things like camping and drilling and all her drill, you know, the being in a drill team and marching. She didn't mention all the brainwashing that happened, the anti-Semitic, becoming a mother was such a, you know, having many Nazi children was part of the brainwashing campaign. But I asked her, well, how, and she said, I never had anything against the Jews. So I said, well, what did you think? What were you feeling when you would walk down the streets and you would see how the Jews were treated? You would see them wearing the yellow star. And she looked really past me, and she looked straight at Sydney, who is Jewish. I'm not. And she said, I can't explain it. She said, it's just something that was, that's the way things were, and I did not even think about it. She said she had Jewish friends currently, and she's talked about it with them. She said, I can't explain it. And then she looked at me, and she said, perhaps you in America might feel that you have some kind of a similar experience as you look at your own history. And that was, that was a sharp and meaningful response from her. It did not explain the severe and brutal treatment that she must have witnessed, especially because her father had been the station master of the railroad station where Hedwig would eventually be deported. She did say, I asked her about that, and she did say that as a child, their family lived above the station. That's how it worked in those days. And she loved to look out of the windows at night and see the steam billowing in the night, in the lights, and loved to watch the shadowy forms of people on the platform. And my heart just stopped because that's the time of, you know, all these Jews were deported at night. So those were the shadowy forms that as a child she had been watching and not grasping what it all meant.
The book does an excellent job of detailing, as you proceed on your journey, one relative at a time, literally, and the surviving part of the family begins to recall. A lot of them didn't know. Some of them did know certain things. Which parts of the family were most helpful? And including, tell us a little bit about the family that had literally saved a whole dining room. Yeah. A treasure trove of information, I think, as you put it.
Yes, it was. There were several big moments of discovery. Celia Sizes, I have to say, takes center stage as the most helpful. And one reason that this book took me a decade to research and write is that about the point a couple of years into the story when I was thinking I was ready to write, she called me late one night and said, "Oh my God, you will not believe what I've just found." She'd found a suitcase pushed to the back of a closet. And in that suitcase were over 100 letters written by Alfred and Hedwig to their daughter in America after their daughter had been able to escape, detailing their lives. So those were written in an old form of German handwriting called Zutterlin that even the members of the German department at the local University of Oregon could not decipher. So it took me a long time to get those letters translated. But that was really one of the most moving moments. I realized that I would really hear the voices of Alfred and Hedwig Berger. Finding this Vienna room, this room dedicated, this one room of a house in the home of a Berger descendant, was totally devoted to generations of family records, not just about the Holocaust, but going back for till the mid-1800s. So it was a stunning, stunning discovery. It was actually Alfred and Hedwig's brother whose descendants kept this room, kept all these records. He graciously invited me with Celia Sizes to come and look through his records. The room was, he had built this room onto his house, and with a closet, he had the dining room table that his grandparents had brought from Vienna, pictures on the walls that had come from that dining room, and a great, he called it a vitrina, a glass display case holding knickknacks and plates and pictures. He had so much, and a whole closet bulging with boxes of letters and pictures. So there I found the first picture of Alfred Berger and his family, and I learned the story of his whole extended family who had been trapped in Vienna. So I think those two discoveries were really among the most deeply significant emotionally and in terms of finding the story.
How much did Alfred and Hedwig's descendants know about their fate, if anything?
Well, there was Celia Sizes in New York, whose family couldn't stop talking about the Holocaust. But these were family stories, and they were in bits and pieces. And it had been over years, over Celia's lifetime, that she'd heard these stories. And as I did research, I found that there were huge gaps in the stories, and little pieces of memory didn't have any context. So while she knew the names of all of the family members, which was fabulous and very helpful, a lot of the stories were just bits and pieces. She did have a lot of records, these letters, for instance. And so she was most helpful. And she helped me to connect with the descendants in Israel of the Berger's second daughter. That daughter is not mentioned in Alfred and Hedwig's unanswered letter. She had escaped so quickly out of Vienna. She sailed on a Greek pirate ship to Palestine, evading the British, you know, warships, guns, and ended up swimming ashore. But she did survive in Palestine, and she had two children who I was able to contact, and they were enormously helpful also. They came and met us in Vienna, and together we all researched and discovered the family story.
Now, is she the one who called you? I think you must have recorded a lot, even telephone calls. And her English was not very good at all. And you were on your way to a meeting at that time. And you, the way you wrote that word for word, was really brought me into the story, because it was just another example, as I was reading the book, of how well you related exactly what the contacts were made and what these people had to say and what the real emotional moments were. What do you recall of that?
All right. Well, I don't know that at this minute I can recall it word for word. You may recall it better. But yes, I was actually on my way to a funeral, as it turns out, coincidentally. And suddenly, on my cell phone, I'm driving, and I get this phone call, hello, Faris? And I'm going, yes, this is Faris, who is this? And I couldn't understand exactly who she was. I hadn't heard her voice. I only had known her name was Judith. And so when I heard her say, this is Judith, it took me a moment to put it all together and to understand that this was a Berger descendant calling me from Israel. So I needed to explain to her that I was driving and I couldn't speak at the moment. Could she call me back? Could I call her?
Yeah, I've got that. I forgot that part right here, if you don't mind me reading it to our listeners. Hello, Faris? Yes, this is Faris. Who is this? Judith, I heard, followed by a stream of excited conversation. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. Who is this? Another burst of talking. I heard Celia's name several times, and I deduced that this was Celia's Israeli cousin, Gretel's daughter, Judith. I wanted to talk, but I was late for a meeting. I apologized. Judith didn't understand. She kept talking. I cannot talk now, I interrupted, speaking loudly, over-enunciating. May I call you later? She didn't understand this either. I collected my thoughts. Please write to Celia, I offered. She will contact us by mail. Another flurry of enthusiasm. These people are so excited. Someone has lit up their world and brought back a little family history that's very, very important, either not talked about at all and very little known, or on other parts of the family, some knew it pretty well. And not for the first time, I wished that I had better language skills. But you're very human in the way you write this, and I found it quite enjoyable for that reason.
Thank you. When Judith first heard about the letter, Celia called her with great excitement to tell her about the letter. Judith fell to the floor. She was so emotional, and she too just cried. She immediately called her brother, Micha, who was just about to leave the house to go to a big event, and Judith told him, stay at home, Celia is going to call you about our grandfather. And Celia did call him, and apparently he too wept when he heard these words from the past, from this grandfather they knew almost nothing about. Because while Celia's family had talked incessantly about the Holocaust. Judith's and Micha's family said nothing. Every time they asked a question, their mother burst into tears. And so they had learned never to talk about it, and they knew absolutely nothing. So the whole family was hungry to learn.
What did happen to Alfred and Hedwig and any other members of the immediate family that were still in Austria?
Some of the family's experiences are really transcendent stories of desperation and escape. There was a Berger nephew who escaped by going at night over the Alps into Switzerland. There was Alfred and Hedwig's son-in-law was a Polish immigrant, and he escaped first on a ship to Cuba, which was turned back. He was interned in France for 2 years. He ended up being interned by the French army, running with the French army from the invading Nazis and invading Germany. So there were all different kinds of experiences. Alfred and Hedwig survived in Vienna until 1942. In 1942, Alfred, who was legally blind at that time and carried a white cane, was walking across a very familiar street where he crossed many times before, and he was struck down by a German army truck and killed on the street. He had been slated for deportation just 2 weeks later. His wife Hedwig was still slated, and now she was alone. She was deported alone. I can't even imagine the horror of that time. She'd been married for her whole life. She was then about 55. She'd been married at about 20. And now she was alone. Most of her friends had been deported at that time or had been able to immigrate. And she was put on a train to Minsk. I also took the train to Minsk. It was a modern train and not a deportation train during wartime. And that journey for me was, I think, 12 hours, 14 hours. For Hedwig, that journey lasted almost a week with minimal food, no sanitation, and brutality at numerous points. So her experience was certainly one from hell. And when she reached Minsk, she was immediately loaded onto a truck with the other 1,000 men, women, and children, driven to a pit that had been dug, and she was shot at close range and killed.
Very sorry to hear that. You know, yeah. The whole suspense in this book centers, to me, around the letter that Alfred wrote and that it made it to its destination, the Burgers. And I've worked trying to put myself in their shoes. They receive a letter from someone who is not a part of their family. The only thing this person shares is their same name. They know very little. Americans knew very little about what was going on at that point of history. They didn't really know what was going to be happening to Jews. They really hadn't heard of Anschluss. They hadn't heard of Hitler's ultimate plans and what he had set up and what he was trying to do over there. So I would imagine that not knowing all that, they had no reason to react instantaneously to a letter from people that they did not know.
Yes.
And how did that all enter your mind? And we try to find ourselves looking back. We can say, well, we can be armchair quarterbacks. Oh, well, let's go find a friend or another burger, or let's just write the letter back. It seems easy for us to say today. But
yes.
Looking back at the picture of that family, do they know how far you went with this letter and with this research and with this family? And what are their feelings about it?
Yes. You're correct that nobody in the world could imagine such a thing as the Holocaust. Nobody would have dreamed such a thing could happen. And in fact, Hitler had not really evolved his plan to the stage of total murder when it all began. He thought he would just free the German lands from having any minority groups. And the Jews were just the first on his list. So the people who received this letter would not have known at all about an impending Holocaust or could not have imagined it. I feel like if I received a letter today from someone begging for me to support them coming from another country, I would really have to think hard before I even tentatively responded. That's a big ask. It's a big responsibility. So I don't find myself in the position of blaming this family. And in fact, I feel like if you want to put it that way, a redemption that they saved this letter for, 60 years, several generations. Family moved it from one place to another. So the only thing they did, which really, kind of rankles, is that my husband's patient, who had did a lot to preserve this letter, had a church fundraising event where people were collecting stamps. And so she snipped the stamp off of this letter. So that's missing, keeping the letter from being a complete record. But even so, I think this family deserves an amazing amount of credit for preserving what they originally thought was a piece of history. I have to say that when I interviewed the woman who gave my husband the letter, when I left, she touched me on the arm and said, "Please, I hope you will find out what happened to those desperate people and tell me. I really want to know." I think why this family saved the letter was not what they put out sort of to other people, that it was just a piece of history. I think it was a question of the human heart and that they cared what happened back then.
So well said, and this has been an excellent interview. This book has been a tremendous journey, and it's a long journey for you. What kept you going through all of this? What motivated you? And how do you see it now that you're done?
I see it as a book of questions, to tell you the truth. When I started it, I really wanted to know. I understood right away I would never be able to answer the question of why did the Holocaust even happen? How could such a thing happen? I wanted to know how it happened to this one family, these ordinary people caught in the most extraordinary of times. And I feel that the letter in different forms is still being delivered today. We are still ordinary people, and we certainly are living in extraordinary times. And there are people still begging, "Help us, I beg you, you are our last and only chance." So it's a book of questions for people to think about with our lives today.
Farris Kissel, thank you so much for taking on this huge labor of love. Thank you so much for opening your heart to this family, which you and your husband have done. Thank you so much for unwrapping an important piece of history. And thank you so much for helping to pull this family together, this human family, as well as the Berger family and all their descendants. I know it's appreciated. I highly recommend that our listeners find this book called The Unanswered Letter, which is out there anywhere that good books are being found today. Thank you for the fantastic job you've done.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate your podcast in general. I'm a big fan, and thank you for having me.
Thank you very much, Ferris. Take care.
Take care.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.